Welcome to the Hockey Writers Podcast, where your favorite THW contributors discuss the hottest topics around the NHL and hockey world every weekday, Monday through Friday. Listen daily on iHeartRadio or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to check out our other great content at thehockeywriters.com. I'm your host, Matthew Zator, and I'm here with my usual Friday panel, returning Haynes Evans and Matt Grizzell. How you guys doing on this Friday that we have a couple series in the books now?
I'm doing good, Matthew. How are you? It's exciting as the second round kind of comes to a conclusion here soon.
Yeah, for sure. Haynes, how are you doing?
Doing well. Hoping for less heart attacks than I had the other night in game five. So hoping for a better result, or if it's going to be the end of the game tonight, just make it painless and quick so I can stop watching halfway through.
Yeah, it's that series has been, that last game was probably, we'll talk about that series in a minute, but that series has been, that last game was probably the most exciting game of the series. So I mean, it was pretty good. So let's start with that the series that just ended yesterday. The Battle of Alberta ended in five. Wish it would have ended a little, been extended a bit longer, because that series was like probably the most exciting series of the whole playoffs so far, but we may be getting another one. But you know, start with you, Matt, on this one. I mean, Connor McDavid, of course, wins, you know, scores the overtime winner after being quiet most of the game. But I want to talk about, first I want to talk about this disallowed goal by Blake Coleman. First of all, would you think about it? And do you think it was a kicking motion? Because that controversy has been already on what, whether it was or not.
Yeah, I've kind of, it was a tough call because I watched the replay and it looked like it was trying to, like Coleman was trying to stop, as the announcers had said. But I guess the only thing that kind of main thing was worked against him is the side of his skate came in contact with the puck. Had that not happened, it would have been a goal for Calgary. But it was one of those things, one of those close calls. And I've tried to think, okay, well, what exactly will be a kicking motion? Because it's not like you can kick, aside from making contact with the front of his skate as to the side. It's just a difficult call to make that wasn't as simple. Calgary fans obviously didn't like, and it was a break for Edmonton. So it was just a difficult, very challenging call to make that, and then neither side would have been happy with the results. So whoever went against, in this case, it was Calgary.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. I mean, the thing is that, like, I'm on the side that it wasn't a kicking motion, or even if it was very, like you say, it was a tough call. And to me, there wasn't enough evidence on video. Like, I understand it all, you know, they kind of broke it down, but there wasn't enough evidence to me that you could overturn that goal when you say, like, usually if there's no clear evidence, they just go to the call on the ice, and the call on the ice was a goal. So. Yeah. Why are you saying, you know, was there enough evidence? I don't think there was, especially in a playoff game that basically decided that the Flames don't win this game and get eliminated. So Haynes, what'd you think about that play? I mean, was it a kicking motion in your mind, and you know, enough that they would call that goal back?
You know, I don't think it was a kicking motion, and you know, I have my reasons for there. We've seen that kind of goal multiple times this season. You could easily go through and find multiple cases this year and instances where players going hard to the net, going to cut stop, and it reflects off that skate and in. And, you know, and every single instance I've seen this year, it's been called a goal. So yeah. I was actually a little bit surprised that they washed that over and they thought that was a kicking motion. I really never saw Blake Coleman's skate come off the ground there. And, you know, and it from every area that you guys are talking about, I mean, it does. He's coming hard to the net and he's going to cut stop, and you can tell that he changes on that cut last second because he hits him to the side of the goalpost. So I think this is a situation of this is a guy coming in hard. We got to also understand, too, this puck was going in the net if he had not hit off his skate or not. Yeah. The puck was already going across the line anyway. So I really do think here the refs kind of may have had screwed Calgary here on a late goal. I think that was definitely a goal by Coleman, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, he made a good point on that. You know, it's not like he made, you know, if he didn't kick it, that it wouldn't have gone in. Like, it was going to go in. So shouldn't it be that, okay, if he didn't kick it, it wouldn't have gone in?
Exactly. You know? Why would he need to kick it? If the puck was already going to go across the line, why would he need to kick it? That's the underlying argument here, is if people are saying he's kicking it, but if it's going to go into the net, why would he have the need to kick it? It was already going across the line.
Yeah. Like, it's a tough call. And I mean, they had to go upstairs and it took a bit of time. So it's not like that they just went and made the decision really quick. So yeah, it's going to be tough. You know, it's going to be something that's going to be talked about all through the off season. And, you know, it kind of harkens back to when Calgary Flames were in the Stanley Cup final against the Tampa Bay Lightning way back when. And they, mm-hmm. you look back at a play that they scored the game winner, series winner, who should have won the cup. And it went over the line and they didn't even look at it. So you go back to those replays, Flames should have won that cup way back. I don't know when that was. It was a while ago.
2004.
So same year that the Canucks it played Calgary in the first round there. So, so, I mean, they've been screwed now twice in the last, like, so it's
20 years. They've been screwed twice in the playoffs in some big games.
Yeah, so I feel for the Flames and Markstrom. I mean, that series was really exciting. You know, just before we move on, I mean, thoughts on the series as a whole. You know, Haynes, we'll start with you. I mean, how do you think this series went? Do you think the Oilers were the deserving team to win this one, or did the Flames deserve better? You know, overall.
You know, I was kind of disappointed by this series. I like you said, I really thought it would have gone more the distance. To see it over in five games shocked me. I don't want to say that the Oilers were the best of the two teams, but I don't want to say that Calgary should have dominated that series. But, I mean, both teams were really good on paper. I think maybe Calgary had a little bit better in terms of lines. Now, granted, like Daryl Sutter said, it was the Flames against the show of McDavid and Draisaitl. And, you know, those are two really hard guys to stop. And we've seen their point numbers so far in this postseason. So I don't really think either team was outright dominant, but to see the Oilers just outright win in five really shocked me, because I really thought this series would have gone seven games.
Yeah. Well, for me, I mean, I think what's big about this series is kind of being overlooked. And I said in the postgame yesterday was that, you know, yes, McDavid and Dreisaitl have been great, but you look at their depth, like Zach Hyman, Evander Kane, Puljujarvi scored yesterday. You know, if Evan Bouchard's been really good. So it's like there are guys that are scoring goals that, you know, that's why they weren't winning in the past, because, you know, McDavid would, well, he was getting shut down too. I mean, in the past playoffs, he wasn't really doing much. But now he's got support. So even if he doesn't, well, he scored the game winner, yes, but they wouldn't have got there without Hyman, Puljujarvi. You know, Vander Kane's been amazing throughout these playoffs. You know, take away his off-ice stuff, his on-ice, I mean, it's never been argued. So, you know, they're getting depth scoring that they didn't get in the past. And like I said, Maple Leafs fans are probably wondering where this Zach Hyman was when when they were in the first rounds and getting eliminated. So, Matt, what'd you think about this series overall? And, you know, did Edmonton, were they the best team to see at a 4-1 series end there?
I think they were. When you look at the goal differential in the other games, aside from game one, Calgary seemed to have trouble scoring again, or not as much as the first round series against the Dallas Stars. But, you know, you have three key players in Johnny Gaudreau, Tara Toffoli, and Andrew Mangiapane, who didn't really contribute that much in the playoffs this year after having, you know, fantastic regular seasons. You know, Johnny Gaudreau is going to either get a big contract with Calgary or somewhere else. And he had a good regular season, but he only scored three goals in the playoffs. And, you know, that happens especially in a series against Edmonton where they had their share of struggles between their two goalies throughout the regular season. So, but you know, they're getting plenty of offense and they're not putting their goaltender in a position to save the game for them. So yeah, the Flames just, their forwards, well, their offense just didn't, just seem to be unreliable during the postseason as a whole. When you look at, in when you have to compete with a high scoring attack such as Edmonton,
yeah,
you need to have those large, those fair amount of contributions, and they just didn't get that. So I think, Edmonton was the better team in the series, and it showed as they won in five games. And also, it really comes down to when you have an incident like with Blake Coleman. You know, had they been in other games, or had they won another game or two, they wouldn't have been in the position where this would have costed them the series. So
yeah,
if they would have done better offensively beforehand. So yeah, it's just no doubt Edmonton was a better team.
Yeah, the thing is Calgary's defense kind of, and they, I mean, you say about they're not scoring. I mean, their defense didn't look very good throughout the series too, right? And you know, you're having to, yes, you're dealing with all world talent in McDavid and Draisaitl. Draisaitl was hurt, you know, and he still put up points. So, I mean, it's yeah, I think they were the better team, but you look at how Calgary, they just didn't come. I don't think they played the same as what they were in the regular season. So, you know, it should have been closer. They scored their share of goals. I mean, if you look at the goal totals, most of the games were high scoring. So, but yeah, some of the main guys didn't really come to play. I mean, Mangiapane scored his first goal in the last game. Goudreau, I think, only scored one or two times. Tkachuk was limited to the one game. So he had the hat trick in the first game, but then kind of went quiet the rest of the way. So, you know, none of them were really consistently good. So, yeah, I think Edmonton did deserve to win the series. And you looked at what McDavid did. I mean, ridiculous. So, and Zach Hyman, I'd say Zach Hyman was probably the, other than McDavid, was probably their best forward. And then Kane had that one game with the hat trick. But yeah, it was a fun series to watch. So we'll see what the next one has in store. Before we get to talking about that potential one, let's talk about the Carolina Hurricanes, New York Rangers series. Matt, we'll start with you on this one because you cover the Rangers and you're the Metro Division specialist here. You know, this series, again, has become a road, you know, home team series. So anyone, there's no team that has won on the road yet. Do you think the Hurricanes will be able to find a way to win on the road and close this series, or will the Rangers win again and bring it back to Carolina?
I think the Hurricanes have the advantage in this series, but I think the Rangers, it wouldn't surprise me if they win the sixth game, although they've really have been hurt by their lack of production on the really throughout their top guys. Artemi Panarin, he has struggled. Chris Kreider has struggled this series. A lot of them have struggled. I think the only two players who have had one or more points in consecutive games this series are Mika Zibanejad and Adam Fox, and that's not going to get it done, yeah, especially against a good Carolina Hurricanes team. The Hurricanes have the home field advantage, and not too many goals have been scored. It's nine goals apiece for each, yes, team during this series. So it's not like the Hurricanes have been dominant. But when they get there on the Carolina home ice, they just have shut the Rangers down. Even on the Rangers home ice, they've limited of the Rangers, maybe not as much, because actually going back, Rangers won those two games, but definitely on when Carolina gets them on the home ice, they've shut them down and Carolina gets the home ice. But I think Carolina, they would benefit a lot from winning a game on the road, especially advancing to play the best team in the league the past couple of years in the Tampa Bay Lightning. If they don't learn how to win on the road, I think they're going to lose to Tampa if they advance past the Rangers here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, the thing is the Hurricanes, I mean, they must be fueled by their home, by their crowd. And the thing is, and the matchups, like Jordan Staal is always against the top guys, and he seems to be able to shut them down, and they get leads. And the thing is, you go on the road and they don't seem to get leads. And then I don't know what it is. It looked like two different teams. We were talking on the podcast yesterday. Haynes, what do you think about this series? I mean, to me, it hasn't been the most exciting series. I mean, we've had two other really good ones. And I mean, the Florida Tampa was really good too. What do you think about this series and fact that it's still, I mean, the Hurricanes, it's the second series in a row. They haven't been able to win on the road. They've gone, undefeated on home ice? So, I mean, what do you think about this series, Haynes? It's basically a home team affair again.
Yeah, no, I mean, I made the joke last night and, you know, to someone, and I'll say it again. If, you know, the Hurricanes kind of have two things running for them here. Either you break your losing streak on the road tonight and you have the momentum going to Carolina or into Tampa, or you lose and you have the benefit of the doubt knowing you're coming back home where you're undefeated. So Carolina really has two things working for them here. They really don't want to lose tonight, honestly, but they know if they do, they return back home where they haven't lost yet. So it's also tough for Carolina or even New York if they move on here, because you got to sustain, you know, road pressure right there. And, you know, building off and feeding off your home crowd's always huge in the playoffs, but being able to go on the road and steal games and silence other crowds is a big thing too. And that's something that Carolina especially hasn't been able to do in these playoffs. And that's something that, you know, will come and bite them if they end up getting Tampa here in the second round. So, I do agree with you. It's not really been the most entertaining series. I know there's been a little chirpiness with, especially with Tony D'Angelo and Gerard Gallant. And, you know, I know that some guys have been going at each other and all that, but it hasn't been the most high physical offense maybe you've seen in some of the other series, like you said. But, I mean, it's something that is going to be interesting to watch if Carolina does do it here in game six, which I don't think they do just with their – luck right now on the road. But if they do somehow make it through tonight, they gotta learn how to get wins on the road, because a team like Tampa is not going to make it easy on you.
Yeah, and the thing is, this is not just this year. Last year they had problems winning on the road as well. You know, in the first round they were able to win on the road and go to the second round, but I believe they got eliminated in the second round last year too. So it's going to be tough. And the thing is, like we were talking yesterday's episode, that, you know, you don't really want to be getting into this you know, game seven type thing when you have Shesterkin, who can put on a show in one game. You know, you hope that that's not going to happen, but you don't really want to keep doing this, like going into game seven every time, because they have home ice throughout the playoffs until, what is it, that they can, if they meet the
Stanley Cup,
has more points than them. So the only team that they would have not, they wouldn't have home ice is the Avs if they make it to the Stanley Cup final. So, they can kind of, this recipe for success can still keep going if they keep winning at home, but you can't keep hoping that that's going to be the case, that you're always going to win at home, because eventually you won't. So,
yeah, especially against either Shesterkin, or if they make it past them, next round they get Vasilevskiy. Yeah. So. Yeah. It's going to be even tougher.
Yeah, and Vasilevskiy, we all know what he can do in elimination games. So,
oh yeah, we've
seen puts on shutouts for almost every one of them. So it's like, or allows one goal, like against Toronto.
Yeah, one goal and 200 shots, and game sevens are in elimination games.
Yeah, it's like insane.
Insane.
So, I don't think they really want to do that against it. I mean, they have to make it past Shesterkin first, who can do that too. So. You know, that's going to be interesting to see what happens tonight. If we're talking about on Monday with, if this series is over. So we'll see. Let's talk about the one that's happening tonight. Game six, Avs Blues, which almost ended in game five with that Nathan MacKinnon ridiculous end-to-end goal. But St. Louis able to tie it and win it in overtime on Tyler Bozak's overtime winner. let's start with you, Haynes. I mean, you talked about this series before the show. Do you think the Blues force a game seven, or do the Avs close it out?
I look at three different things here when I'm looking at the series tonight, and there's three different things I look at here. One is you never can say never in these situations. Many teams have come back down 3-0, 3-1 in series, so you can never say never. But at the same time, you got to start shutting down guys like Nathan MacKinnon, who went off for a hat trick last game, should have been the game winner. Nazem Kadri, who got a hat trick the game before then. And, you know, and the Blues finally let their emotions die down. The game before that, it was all focused on stopping Kadri. It was going after Kadri. Yeah. And, you know, this last game, they really put that aside and they worked and they focused more on the game itself. And, you know, that's the biggest area is St. Louis going to worry about tonight is you got to get everybody going. You can't rely on David Perron. You can't rely on, you know, Ryan O'Reilly. You can't rely on Vladimir Tarasenko. It's got to be – everybody's got to be working with each other and everybody's got to be communicating out there on the ice because, you know, this Colorado team is a fast team. They're physical and they're fast and they can beat you easily. Yeah. And St. Louis is, you know, down Jordan Binnington after, you know, that, you know, freak accident there, collision with Kadri and Rosen and, you know, that hurt the Blues a lot. You know, you've seen some of that confidence go away after they lost them with, you know, with Ville Husso coming in and taking over and the crease. So it really comes down to if St. Louis can get going. You know, they've lost both games of the series at home. And that's the biggest issue for the Blues here is you had to start hot like you did in games 3 and 4, but you have to continue the pressure. You can't get hot and die down. And that's what they did in games 3 and games 4 there against Colorado. So if they can come out hot, play hot, and maintain lead like they did in game 2 and not have to play comeback like they did, you know, in the last in game 5 here, I think they can force a game 7. But Colorado is coming out there. They want this. They want to get back to that conference final. It's been 20 years since they made it. So I'm expecting a really, really hard-fought game. For my safety, I'm hoping not to have any close heart attack like I did last game. So I'm really hoping – for my safety, the Blues put it away and within reach, but I'm expecting a really, really good game tonight.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tight game. Matt, what do you think about this series? Do you think the Blues have it in them to force a game 7, or do the Avs close it out?
Anything can happen, but I, especially with St. Louis at home, but I think the Avs close it out tonight. They're another deep team. If you look at, you know, they have a potential Norris Trophy winner in Cal Maker. Nazem Kadri is another addition who seems to be benefiting from the attention on from like that Nathan MacKinnon and players such as he and Gabriel Landeskog command. Kadri has been a player that's benefited from that. Like similarly to how Evander Kane benefits from the attention that Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on the Oilers. So it's just another deep team and they want to get this this kind of proverbial monkey off their back because they were supposed to be go deep into the playoffs last year and they underachieved. So I think they want to get this done and why not get it done on the road. You know, don't give another team life in a game 7 where, yeah, you have home ice, but, you know, all it takes is a incident such as a Blake Coleman goal repeating itself and then St. Louis scores in overtime. So to win the series. So I just believe in closing it out when you have the opportunity. But yeah, Colorado is such a strong team. I just thought of if they were to advance and play Tampa, that would be a really exciting series. You have two deep teams going at it, and that would be an exciting matchup to see for sure. Kind of getting ahead of myself, but just looking at Colorado's roster, I just think they have a lot of firepower, and they'll be tough to beat. So I think they get the advantage tonight.
Yeah, and I mean, looking ahead, I mean, if that potentially happens, the Avs do win it, it's going to be Nathan MacKinnon versus Connor McDavid. So that's that will be a hell of a series. And yeah, I mean, you're talking about Tampa, Colorado. I mean, Edmonton, Colorado. Yeah, it's gonna be fun either way. So we'll see what happens tonight. And if we're talking about on the post game, talking about a game seven potentially, or finish the series. So we will see. All right, let's get to our articles of the day for this Friday. We'll start with you, Matt. What is your article of the day?
My article of the day is by my fellow colleague covering New York Rangers, Rachel Nunes. It's titled "Rangers Deadline Acquisitions Playing a Profound Role." It's basically looked at how they've performed up to this point since they were acquired about 2 months ago now, and she looks at Andrew Kopp, Frank Vetrano, and Tyler Mott. Andrew Kopp, you know, he's a pending free agent, and he's Chris Drury traded a lot for what looked to be a lot for him at the deadline, but Andrew Kopp has exceeded expectations, and he's earned his contract. I think it'll be if he gets an offer for that would be kind of bit over maybe more than what he's worth, such as a $6 million average annual value, because that's the kind of contract he's commanding with his production so far. Maybe not as much as in the Carolina series, but he's been one of the best forwards for the Rangers since he was acquired, and he seems to only be getting better in his with his offensive skills as an initially defensive forward. He's probably their best faceoff person at taking faceoffs, as that's been a struggle for the team all year. So I would look for him for the Rangers to do their best to keep him. Petrano's been great on the first line. Again, not so much this series, but he benefits from the attention from that's taken from Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider. And Tyler Motz, he missed some time towards the end of regular season and during the Pittsburgh series, but he gives the Rangers speed on the checking line. Mm-hmm. And he's a very good bottom six forward. So, again, that's by Rachel Nunes. It's called Rangers Deadline Acquisitions Playing a Profound Role.
Yeah, well, I know all about Tyler Mott. I came from Vancouver here, and I was kind of angry to see him get traded because I really like him on the Canucks. So I'm hoping... fingers crossed that the Canucks just sign him in the offseason to free agency after he, you know, kind of a rental for the Rangers. And but I'm sure the Rangers are going to try to get him back. That's how he's played, because that's how he plays. And he's probably one of the best, I'd say one of the best bottom six forwards in the NHL. I mean, I may be a little biased, but I think he's just so good at his role. So yeah, I'm happy to see him succeed, but I want him back in Vancouver here. So, all right, Haynes, what is your article of the day?
My article of the day is Bruins and Jets could produce 2022 offseason blockbuster. It's by Michael DeRosa. Pretty much what he goes into is he kind of starts off with Mark Scheifele. If no one has seen, you know, the reports of them going around, he at the, you know, in the season when they're, you know, they're doing final, you know, cleaning out lockers and all that, they were asking what he thought about the team going forward. And he, you know, he said he was kind of contemplating his future and that he kind of wants to know the direction the team was heading, which is, you know, understandable for a Jets team that this season was very lackluster. And the year before that was swept in the second round by the Montreal Canadiens. And, you know, at 29 years old, you know, he's getting up there in age and, you know, he wants to compete for something. And if the Jets are going to rebuild mode, he wants out. So, you know, Michael goes into depth to talk about how the Bruins kind of need a little bit of help at center with Patrice Bergeron potentially maybe could retire, maybe could go somewhere else this summer if that is to be trade or whatever that may be. If he doesn't go, you know, the Bruins need some help at center. And, you know, Mark Scheifele is a guy who would fit that area. He's a really great guy. He'd fit well in the second line there with Taylor Hall and David Pastrnak. So, I mean, that would be a really deadly second line there if they could get him in. But, you know, Michael kind of goes in depth and talks about that some guys look at. Jake DeBrusque never has fully taken away his trade request. He could be a guy going the other way if this trade were to happen. Matt Grizzlick could be a guy going the other way. Even maybe Mike Riley or Derek Forbert could be going the other way in this trade. So it's definitely not something that I would think you should sweep under the rug. I definitely think the Mark Scheifele talk is going to heat up this summer, whether he makes a trade request or not. If they do decide this is the direction they want to go as rebuild, I would not be surprised to see him get dealt this summer. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch. I think the Bruins are definitely a team that could meet those needs in terms of a trade here. But, yeah, Bruins and Jets could produce 2022 offseason blockbuster by Michael De Rosa is my article of the day.
Yeah, I mean, Mark Scheifele's had some bit of drama with the Jets too, like locker room stuff. So, you know, people questioned his leadership and stuff like that. So he may want out, you know, considering. So we'll see. It's going to be something to really watch in Winnipeg, because they do have to make some changes because they haven't really made it. They didn't make the playoffs. And then they have made the playoffs. They haven't really done much there. So it's something, I think this core needs a bit of a change. Trading Scheifele would be a huge change to that core. And I think Pierre-Luc Dubois has really kind of come ahead of Scheifele as being part of that new core. So I could see that happening. I don't know if it's going to be to Boston, because they have some cap issues to deal with there. And I mean, but if Bergeron retires, that's some money off. And so we'll see what happens with the Jets and with the Bruins. And that's going to be an interesting situation to watch for sure. All right. My article of the day is a Toronto Maple Leafs article. It's called Maple Leafs Have Roster Answers in Pontus Holmberg. This is by Andrew Forbes, a longtime writer here at the Hockey Writers. Writes for the Jets, does prospects, draft, all that stuff. And of course he's talking about a prospect, and I always gravitate to these types of articles because I love prospects. So this is on Pontus Holmberg. It's a little bit of a unknown prospect. He's not one of the high end guys that, the Maple Leafs have, you know, Nick Robertson, those types of guys, but, you know, he's closer to the NHL. I mean, he was drafted in the sixth round in 2018. So it's been a while since he was drafted, but, just signed his ELC on June 4th. Last June, and had a pretty good year in the overseas. So, and he's probably going to be coming over and fighting for a roster spot this coming season. So, Andrew talks about that, and that he could be an answer for a bottom six role, and under, you know, 800, you know, very cheap ELC. So, I mean, that's what these teams that have high, you know, these big guys at the top of their lineup taking up most of their cap space. You need these guys to contribute, because you can't really add much to the bottom of your lineup when you have guys like Matthews and Marner and them taking up most of your salary cap space. So he talks about that, you know, a bit about who Holmberg is as a player and why he deserves a shot on the roster. You know, he's been really good. So he did play. He did play in North America before, but then went back to Sweden. So we will see what happens with Holmberg. So definitely check out that article. Maple Leafs Have Roster Answers in Pontus Holmberg, and that is by Andrew Forbes. All right. That's another episode. Thanks, Haynes, Matt, for coming on. Before we let our listeners go here, I just wanted to give you guys an opportunity to, you know, showcase anything you have in the works. Haynes, we'll start with you.
Yeah, you know, I'm continuing along. If people are following along with my Coyotes 2022 offseason player reviews, I have now gone successfully through Alex Galchenyuk, Christian Fisher, Travis Boyd. Up this upcoming week will be Liam O'Brien, and after that will be Anton Stralman, but I'm not going to give away who's after that because I have a little list. But, yes, I have some more coming along the way. I am going to be hopefully in the next week or so putting out my first prospects report, kind of looking at who the Coyotes could take with that third overall pick in the draft. Me and Pat Brown are going to be working on that. But, yeah, y'all can honestly keep along with my work there on the Hockey Writers.
All right. Thanks, Haynes. And Matt, what do you have in the works coming up?
I've currently been working on four free agent forwards that the Philadelphia Flyers should target in free agency this offseason. They are looking for an aggressive retool, according to their general manager, Chuck Fletcher. And there's a number of free agents that they can sign that would do that, especially if they can afford a big free agent or a popular free agent. And if they manage to get a secondary player that would fit well on the top on their top six and can be flexible throughout the lineup, but can contribute offensively as well. So I'm hoping to have that done today. Hopefully it'll be posted by this afternoon. If not this afternoon, then probably sometime on Saturday.
All right, so look forward to that. And as for myself, I'm working on some trade articles for the Canucks to try to take advantage of some salary cap strap teams. And you know, the Canucks do have to deal with their own salary cap, but you know, during the offseason, you can go over until the beginning of the season. So we'll see what happens there, and I'll be writing that. And then, of course, I'll be doing some draft targets for the Canucks as well. Hopefully, they keep their first round pick this year. So. All right. So that's another episode, another Friday in the books. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Hockey Writers Podcast. Listen to new episodes Monday to Friday on iHeartRadio and wherever you get your podcasts. And make sure to check out our other great content at thehockeywriters.com. For Matthew Zator, Haynes Evans, and Matt Grizzell, this has been the Hockey Writers Podcast.